Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
And we're back with episode 323 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me, as always, is Aiden Morgan. Aiden?
What color is the boathouse at Hereford?
I don't know!
What color is the boathouse at Hereford?
I don't know!
You're out of this movie, Sean Bean. Get out of here.
You didn't get killed doing it. That feels like a win.
A complicated win.
Yeah.
Yes.
But anyway, we are talking today about 1998's Ronin. I love this because directed by John Frankenheimer, who of course did things like The Manchurian Candidate, the 96 version of Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh my God, you're right. How did I forget about that?
Year of the Gun.
Oh, man. And he also did Reindeer Games right after Ronin, which I saw in theaters. And, like, I was dating this girl, and I think she almost dumped me for taking her to see Reindeer Games because it was...
That's fair.
I know. And I felt I would have deserved it, too. So
he also directed The Iceman Cometh, which, weirdly, was the cause of me being terrified as a small child because I didn't know what the movie was.
Yeah.
Someone was like watching it, like I think my parents were watching it, and they're just, oh, it's the Iceman Cometh. And somehow in my head, I was like, oh, it's like an ice monster, so I should never open the freezer again. It was a weird time. But true. But also, it was written by J.D. Zeke, who pretty much didn't write much else.
Nope. And didn't write much of this either, apparently.
Right. But what he did write was the Witchblade TV movie that served as the basis for the show.
Whoa.
That was the thing he worked on right after Ronin.
Man, that's something.
I was just like, I don't know what it means, but it means something. But as you say, you know, feel free to pick this one up. As you say, he kind of sort of wrote it.
But it was more kind of sort of written by David Mamet.
Yeah.
He was a script doctor, did major changes, and was not actually credited in the movie. I think there is a pseudonym because I think he just got tired of the process and he said, take my name off this. So much of the dialogue, once you know it's David Mamet, you begin to hear it. Like that bit about what's the color of the boathouse at Hereford.
Oh, yeah.
That is pure Mamet. It's Mametian, one might say.
Yeah. No, it's obvious that he wrote, you know.
Yeah. It's a bunch of men speaking in like, you know, clipped rapid fire tones at each other about the procedures of things.
Right.
And yeah, it doesn't get much more Mamet than that.
It's weirdly true.
So yeah, it's funny when I look at I always have this idea that Frankenheimer is this sort of great director, and he does have a few
really
good films, like, you know, Birdman of Alcatraz, Manchurian Candidate, 7 Days in May. There's a lot of really good stuff like back in the 60s, and then there's French Connection too. But honestly, a lot of his stuff later in his life is not great.
I mean that can happen to anyone.
Yeah, Island of Dr. Moreau, Reindeer Games, Ronin. Ronin has some things to recommend it. Actually, I think, but like right. Year of the Gun, yikes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Again, like it happens, you know.
It happens. But there's some great stuff that he's done. There are some classic films. And I kind of think of Ronin in some ways as like the best late 60s spy movie that the late 90s had to offer.
I still think of Ronin as the single best mediocre movie you'll ever see.
that's actually probably the best way to put it.
And actually, I have a weird... I want to relate it to a song later, but we'll get there. We should just talk about like who's actually in this thing, because that's what starts making it really interesting.
Right. So we've got...
We've got Sean Bean, obviously.
We've got Sean Bean for a while. Yeah. Obviously, we've also... Robert De Niro is our main character. His name is Sam, but I'm not sure that anybody ever says his name in the film.
I don't think so.
He's just this unnamed character, but better than De Niro is Jean Reno as Vincent, because
I would argue that, like, but again, that yeah, no, De Niro's supposed to be the main character, but he isn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a way it's kind of structured like that, but but his performance is so buttoned down that we get all these other great actors just kind of outshining him just by virtue of being there. So we get Jean Reno as Vincent. We've got Natasha McElhone as Deirdre. We've got Stellan Skarsgård as Gregor. Sorry. I find the character of Gregor to be one of the funniest things. Skip Seneth as Larry. R.I.P. Yep. Larry. We've got Michael Lonsdale as Jean-Pierre in a small nice role. And then Jonathan Pryce as Seamus O'Rourke.
I always just love seeing him pop up at things.
I know, but Seamus O'Rourke. IRA dissident Seamus O'Rourke.
Yes, indeed. The name is
The IRA connection in this movie is there's some parts about it. I don't want to talk about the biggest howler right now, but we will get to the biggest howler with the IRA connection towards the end of the movie.
Yeah, we will. But yeah, no, to relate this, and again, kind of sum it up in a weird way, like, okay, we're done. But I feel like this movie is kind of the In the Air Tonight of movies.
Ooh.
Someone recently described In the Air Tonight as a drum fill wearing a song as a hat.
I like the song, but yeah, I think you're right.
Not that the song is bad, again. But the rest of the song doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is all about you can tell, like, there's this drum fill, we want to use this, and how are we going to, you know, we'll build something around it, I guess, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And this essentially, I mean, I feel like it's a two car chases wearing a movie as like a jacket or something.
Yeah. It is the car chases. It is just the acting in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every single piece of this movie, like the directing, the acting, like all of that is astounding. But the actual movie, like plot wise and all that, is kind of there.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I think it's one of those things where this could have been like a really great movie, but I'm not sure how. Because it seems to have all the ingredients of a great movie, but you know, it just, for some reason, like, it's like the souffle just will not rise.
Right.
You take it out of the oven, you're like, ah, shit. And then you put it back in and you take it out and you're like, ah, now it's overcooked. You know, that's just the way it goes. Hey, by the way, can I tell you the funniest piece of trivia, or this one of the pieces of trivia that just really made me chuckle? J.D. Zeick. Is it Zeick? I don't know. One of the script's writers explained how he was inspired for the script. And he says, In Nice, I was suddenly blinded by the sun, when I saw five heavily armed policemen on the promenade. In that second, I knew the movie had to be set in France.
What?
Yeah, he was in France and he saw a French thing and he was like, I gotta make a movie set in France.
Oh, okay, dude, sure.
Yeah. Just, I'm sure like the way it's phrased in the trivia is probably taking it out of context, but I'm like,
right. Yeah, I'm sure it's more like, you know, like the sound over the thing, the way the lighting works, that, you know, you could do a chase, you could have the blinding by, all that.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, okay, this I could write a movie, and this is a great setting for like an espionage sort of post Cold War film. But
right.
I don't know. It's like I looked at my foot and I saw my toe, and I thought I got to make a movie about this toe, and that was the inspiration for my movie, The Toe.
Yeah.
Or my, I looked at my left foot, and then I was like, I got to make a movie about my left foot.
I mean, hey now.
And that's how I made Die Hard. What?
Yeah.
Shut up. That's how I made Die Hard. Anyway, so yeah, that's how this movie got made, because J.D. Zeick was in France and thought, France, the movie.
Hell of a place to make a movie.
And then I guess Frankenheimer was like, yeah, we got to make this movie. And then David Mamet was like, the script sucks.
So we have the start of the film, which is a weird thing to me.
Starts in Paris with a really distractingly uneven pan. Like,
yeah.
The first shot of this movie just, I kind of get it. It felt like when I say this felt like a 60s movie, like the way the camera moved wasn't smooth. It was clearly like done almost deliberately in a way that looks like somebody sort of moving it, adjusting it. But at the same time, I'm like, this is the late 90s. We can do a smooth pan.
Sure.
I don't know. The opening shot knocked me out of the movie. And then I had to sort of fight to get back in it.
I get that. I feel like the entire opening scene was just overwrought for the sake of being overwrought.
Yeah, that's incorrect. I enjoyed like the sort of the way it kind of slowly built, the way that we get that sort of character detail with Sam. Instead of walking into this bar, he stakes it out, goes around the back, stashes a gun.
Right.
And then comes in, like, I'm like, okay, I get that. But it was also, it just felt so kind of overwrought. You put it perfectly. It could have been careful and sort of character building, but it just felt like a little bit too much for just sitting around in a bar. I don't know.
Yeah. That's my problem. It's just like, it starts kind of wonky.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move to.
And then they just like, get in the van and then go somewhere else, which is.
And they just never go to a second location.
Never follow an IRA dissident to a second location.
Yeah, and like I said, like it feels like it's building towards a thing that never gets there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is part of the movie, right? Everything keeps going wrong.
Yeah.
But because we spend a good 30 minutes just dealing with the first bit.
Yeah, it is a long time spent on the buildup.
You're right.
Quite right.
And it's, I mean, there's fun in there again. Like De Niro and Jean Reno are having a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that is just sitting around, which, you know, building tenseness, I get.
Yeah. And it's the thing that bugs me is that the whole scenario of like post Cold War operatives, people who once had masters but are now just sort of out there for hire doing, you know, espionage for money, like people without a purpose. I mean, that is such fertile ground for like a really good thriller. And they kind of do it, but I feel like they the movie is so, it's like Robert De Niro's character. It's so buttoned down and closed off.
Yeah.
That it never seems to like get to where it needs to go. And you exactly. never get the catharsis you're looking for.
Right. And it, again, it keeps teasing it to you because you keep getting, frankly, like Jean Reno, if nothing else,
mm-hmm.
like you keep kind of expecting this to go somewhere bigger.
Yeah.
Or at least not even bigger, but just more alive, as you're putting it. You know, it just it never does.
Where's tiny Natalie Portman to show up and shoot people? Huh? Okay, I understand that's not the crossover.
Why is he traveling to the present and thinks he's a never mind? Do you know that movie?
Yes.
Okay. I can't think of the name of it. People who don't know, there is a movie where Jean Reno plays like a medieval knight and ends up traveling to the future. I think he falls in love with.
Oh my God,
Christina Applegate. Yes,
I barely remember this. Okay, now I'm curious.
Is it Just Visiting? Yes.
Just what a terrible title for a movie like that.
Oh yeah, no. It's what's even better is. It's actually a retelling of a 1993 French comedy.
That's right. I knew this. I remember this.
Except it's, you know, he ends up traveling to Chicago where he falls in love with Christina Applegate. It's
as you do.
It's not good, is all I'm gonna say.
Is it not good enough for us to watch and talk about on the show, or is it not good?
No, it's like just legitimately just not good.
All right.
We could find Wasabi if you want.
Wasabi.
If you have you, oh God, okay, I have to find Wasabi now. Keep talking about this. Okay. Keep talking about Ronan for a second. While I try
right, to figure right, out. Right, right. Okay, so. So we get these Cold War Ronin, post Cold War Ronin gathered in like in a bar. Then they're taken to a second location, where they are introduced to the details such as they are of this heist. That they have right. to basically they have to get a briefcase from yes. some people.
Welcome before to MacGuffin territory.
Right. They have to get the MacGuffin, and everybody wants the MacGuffin. So they're. They're just planning for the MacGuffin. And most of this part of the movie involves people asking questions of Natasha or McElhone's character, Deirdre, yeah. about, you know, about her, about who hired them, about details. And she just keeps saying, you'll find out or you don't need to know that, which is a little frustrating. It's, you know,
yeah,
I get it, but...
Sorry, I'm going to say something that's terrible because I feel like I'm close to racist.
Is it about the case?
It is not, but at least it's going to come close to racist. I spent the first, like, now I saw this before, but after I saw Commitments and then went back and watched this, I spent like half the movie like thinking, like, she was in the Commitments, right?
Oh my God.
No, she's the one Irish actress who wasn't in the Commitments, it turns out.
Fair enough. Like I really like Natasha McElhone. I always every time like there are movies with her, I'm like, oh good, it's Natasha McElhone. And you know I know that some people at the time sort of made fun of her Irish accent. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought Jonathan Pryce's Irish accent was a little much.
Yeah.
But I just thought, but the scenes where they're talking about the case, you've got to get the case. Like, shut up. Although, could you find a different MacGuffin that does not have you saying case repeatedly?
No.
Just say MacGuffin. Gotta get the MacGuffin. So there's not much drama, but then there's like that action scene with the shootout. But here's the weirdest thing about this movie, and it's got to do with Sean Bean's character, Stephen.
Right.
Because, like, we know instantly, like, just from the first few exchanges, that Sean Bean's character, a former British SAS man, who may not be SAS, is just like a just a trigger happy Yahoo that is going to get them all killed.
Right.
And you know, De Niro's character basically just humiliates him and gets him kicked out because it's the right thing to do. And then they give him some money, they send him on his way, and that's it.
It is so weird to me.
You like, never I always see end up forgetting again. It. And you just like,
I
no,
always
no, this
forget
is,
that.
This is the guy that shows up in the third act to sell them out.
Yeah.
This is the bit where you're sort of like creating a problem that's going to come back and bite you in the ass, but it never does. Where is he in the third act? What the hell is going on?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, I always forget that he just fucking vanishes.
Yeah, it just boggles my mind. And the thing is, it had been so long since I'd seen Ronin. Like, I saw it in 98.
Right.
All I remembered really was the car chases.
I'd seen it since, and I would always forget that he just vanishes.
Yeah. And
that there's no point to his character.
Yeah. So when I was watching it this time, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. There's, you know, fucking Sean Bean. I'm like, I don't remember what he does at the end of the movie, but I know he shows up. He has to. And then I'm watching it. I'm like, oh wait, he doesn't. What the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, it's Cliff Steele time. What the fuck? Just mind-bogglingly weird decision. And I don't know. I've looked around to see if there's an answer for that. If maybe they wanted to but couldn't, or
I think it was just one of those. I feel like it was something that just got dropped in the script somewhere.
Yeah.
Intentional or not.
You know what they should have done? The credits should have been like a long claymation outro that shows Sean Bean showing up and getting the suitcase.
You joke. But in the French director's cut, no.
There actually is an alternate ending that does not involve Sean Bean, which was included in the special edition DVD.
Yes.
And we can talk about that when we get to the end of this movie.
Sure. But yeah, it just like the movie just kind of barrels along.
Mm-hmm.
And before we even get to like the, you know, the amazingly good car chases.
Yeah.
Again, the only thing keeping this movie going is essentially De Niro and Jean Reno.
Yeah. Wait, it isn't the torrid romance between De Niro and McElhone? Is that
it is not. Weirdly
it is not. Oh, okay.
It is the torrid romance between De Niro and Jean Reno.
That is actually much more accurate. Because there is a romance of sorts between Sam and Deirdre, but it is wow. They do not spend time on it. There is no chemistry between these two characters. It is really bizarre.
And again, and like talk about the whole like, you know, Sam and Vincent thing. Can we also discuss the painfully on the nose scene?
Which one?
When De Niro gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Sean takes him to like some friend of his who can patch him up.
Right, Jean-Pierre.
Right. And we just get like minutes long slow pans of these like hand painted fucking samurai figures.
Right. Apparently we're not actually the right era, I read in one of the trivia bits, but whatever.
I go and complain then to fucking Warhammer.
And then my favorite part about that scene is having Jean-Pierre basically explain the story of the 47 Ronin.
Right.
To Sam. And basically just go, here's you. And then at the end, Sam's like, that's stupid.
It's so weird. Like, it is just so weird.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, there's a guy who does a comedy shtick where he goes around like mall parking lots, and he goes up to people and says, "I'm looking for someone," and he will describe that person to themselves, yeah, like in like exact detail, and the person will go, "No, I haven't seen anyone like that." But that's kind of what it felt like. And it was like, dude, okay, I get what's supposed to be happening in this scene, but yeah, it's that thing you want to happen, that is not actually happening.
Exactly.
But that is actually followed up by, or preceded by, I thought a pretty cool scene where De Niro essentially does the bullet removal surgery on himself.
Sure.
With an interesting little line that suggests that if you're really paying attention, sort of gives away the twist about his identity a little bit. When he says the bullet was sprayed with Teflon, and so he's trying to he was trying to stamp me, and it's the idea being that you've gotten your sort of your documents stamped, like with a, you know, killed in action or whatever, missing,
right,
suggesting that he is indeed still, he is not a Ronin, but he still serves a master, that he is still part of the CIA, which is a thing you find out towards the end of the movie. Shocker, right. Shocker. Which actually I'd totally forgotten, which was actually kind of like, oh, that's sure. Interesting. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, but I mean, really, it's about the car chases. So
right. So let's discuss the car chases.
Oh yes.
I mean, they're good. No, they are good.
They're extremely fucking good. I mean, if you look at the IMDb trivia, 90% of the trivia is about the cars and the car chases.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're paying the ticket price for, is watching.
No, they are fantastic. Like, they're not like that. As much as I love some movies, they are not the modern Fast and the Furious bullshit, let's go like 300 miles an hour thing.
No.
These are actual physical cars,
mm-hmm,
on actual used street.
Jesus, yes.
At very tight street. And that's the thing, right? Like, it's kind of like the bullet car chase. Like, I feel like people watch Bullet now, and this even,
mm-hmm,
and just, I mean, there is some sense of, holy shit, this is, like, real, and it hits you in a different way.
Yeah.
But, like, again, that Bullet car chase is really slow if you watch it now.
Yeah, obviously. This
feels kind of slowish, too, although it's so visceral, it doesn't matter. And mm-hmm, I still do enjoy them about more, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, these are some incredible bits of directing.
Yeah, and stuff. I mean, yeah, it's such a pleasure to watch it. I mean, and it's edited down to like within an inch of its life. I mean, there's some bits I remember seeing in the theater,
right,
and every time the camera basically switched to like a kind of a wheel well sort of point of view where you're just watching this car rocketing through the French countryside, like right at the ground level. It's just so good, and you don't even need music. It's just like the sound of engines like downshifting and revving and people screaming and running out of the way. Just phenomenal. Apparently Skip Suddeth wanted to do the driving, and Frankenheimer let him, and basically said something along the lines of, don't ever let me see brake lights when you're driving.
Yeah.
Like, yep. Okay. Okay. That's, I think, I mean, think there's, he got there's his
early drifting in there. Come on.
Yep. Oh yeah. It's great. Stunt driving in this movie is just without parallel.
Right. And again, just the way it's shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's just visceral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it makes a real difference, as you say, when you see them on real streets. I mean, the first car chases kind of through small towns,
yeah,
and just rocketing up these like tight little lanes people sort of running out of the way. And the second car chase, also really good, when you're, but they're in, I can't remember what city they're in at this point.
Are they in Paris? I don't remember.
When they're on the highway and just going against traffic. I know this.
Oh God!
Been,
and going through the tunnel and like signaling changes with the headlights and all this, just because. Oh God.
Yeah.
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 No, and like you know, when they get to like the traffic circle, and it's just the entire thing is just it's very complex in that. This is going to sound like an insult, but it isn't in that Michael Bay sort of way.
Sure. No, I
you know
get that.
That kind of Michael Bay additive action scene where it just never stops building.
Yeah.
This never stops building, but without it, it never stops building in the technical sense, but it also doesn't have to increase the physical stakes.
Right.
It's a masterclass in how to do a driving scene. It just, they are.
Oh.
And it is, like you said, like the thing that made this movie famous more than anything else.
Yeah, it was wonderful, and yeah.
Yeah.
Although it's funny when you watch it, you're like, huh, any real person driving would just be dead in seconds. They would just like smash into something immediately. And it's so much fun to watch these people just turn into like incredibly good, like you realize they're just incredibly good drivers. And when Natasha McElhone's driving, she does. I love the way that cuts to her, and you see the kind of like calculation and desperation and fear on her face the whole time. Yeah.
Whereas I think it's like De Niro's driving, where he's shaking his hands back and forth a little too much. It doesn't quite sell as well.
Yeah, maybe not quite as well.
And again, you lose it in the moment. It's fine, but
that's fine. Yeah.
So I think at that point we have just, it's going to be a short episode. We do this. We just have to talk about the ending. I'm sure that's what you're talking about, the biggest like weird laugh.
Right. Oh, there's something I want to talk about before we get to the ending. And that's the character of Gregor. One thing, I mean, what a betrayal. It's like Gregor is like the man in the booth. Like he's the one who's supposed to always like, have a, like some wise cracks and like never betray you.
Yeah.
And he betrays everybody. He's in it for himself. But I mean, and I kind of enjoyed that twist when you realize he's actually going to switch out the cases and, you know, try and screw everybody over.
Yeah.
But then there's that scene where he goes to sell the case and the Russian guy shows up with the briefcase full of fake money, and Gregor has a gun with the most overly techie silencer and scope outfit I have ever seen. I'm like, is that real? Where is that prop from? It looks like something out of like an 80s apocalyptic sci-fi thing, or like a cyberpunk thing. It is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to shoot this little girl. And they're like, no, what are you doing? I'm trying to make a point. I'll shoot this little girl. I don't even know her, and I don't like you. What am I going to do to you? I'm like, are you really going to shoot a little girl? What kind of a plan is this? You would be apprehended immediately by cops. What is going on?
I mean, okay, first of all, any of these movies, you have to ignore the cops of it.
I know.
You just do.
I know. I realized that, but I was like, at that moment, I was like, just, wow. Apparently that girl also pops up in like an identical role in Saving Private Ryan. That's her only other role, both uncredited, both like little girl under threat. So in my headcanon, she's the exact same character. She's immortal. We have to look out for her in future movies.
Okay.
Anyway, and that's why she didn't get shot, because she
gotcha.
Magically protected. But yeah, I just could not get over that fucking scope, or the laser sighting. I don't know what it was. It was so ridiculous, and the machinations that he goes through to just end up dead. Also ridiculous, but kudos to Stellan Skarsgård for playing a bad guy.
Right.
Gregor the bad guy. Sure. All right. That's just what I wanted to say on that. But yeah. Let's deal with that ending.
Okay, because there's the MacGuffin reveal, I guess. That might be the thing that makes Well, we don't ever find out what it is, but we find out what it causes, and it makes so little sense.
Right. So, yeah, so we discover in the end that De Niro's character is not really a Ronin, a wave man, which is the actual literal translation of Ronin. Yeah. He is indeed still working for the CIA, and he's not here to get the case. He's here to get the man who wants the case. Seamus O'Rourke, the IRA terrorist, so terroristy that even the IRA has disavowed him.
Yeah.
And they do get O'Rourke in the end, with Jean Reno's Vincent coming in clutch, solidifying that bromance. And then it turns out that because they apprehend O'Rourke, that is what allows the Northern Irish peace process to
see. I always was reading as there's something in the case that lets that happen.
I always thought it was O'Rourke himself, but either way, I'm like, what the fuck? That's
like it's insulting.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. It is like it is the weirdest, dumbest insult to like the Northern Irish like troubles. And it was such a fucking howler. I was just like what
if we did an entire movie that tried to be a cranberry song, and then at the end we went with U2? Is pretty much what I know. That's too harsh, but you see what I'm saying.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. There's. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of like a proper kind of other analogy for this, like. The Second World War was ended because we got like an ultra-Nazi Nazi or something. I don't know. Maybe that's Hellboy. I don't know.
Right? Like, no, it's just, and again, it's not even like, what's in the case? It feels like something in the case helped. And it's, just what are you even talking about?
Right. Exactly. Like, what would have been,
but again,
would be in the case? Like,
this is a movie that is two car chases and some good acting. Wearing a plot as a hat.
Yeah. I was going to say it's two car chases and good performances in a trench coat. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I was like, I just watched that and I was watching it and my jaw dropped with the like unbelievable boneheadedness of that move.
Just, they don't care.
They don't care. I guess.
Anyway, I'm gonna say like this movie has survived a lot of years. You know, Keen Lorber actually puts out a very nice Blu-ray special edition, which the joke was, I had my very old copy of this on DVD,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, okay, maybe I'll watch that. Maybe I'll watch the streaming version on like HBO, which I think I did, because, it was just it looks better, right?
Sure.
And I had ordered the Keenan Lorber special edition. And I physically got it. So I'm watching Ronin and the credits roll. And as the credits finish, there's a knock on the door and there's a package that has the fucking Blu-ray. And I'm like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't have done this 2 hours ago? Really?
I
still put it in like play and make sure, like, see what I. And it is a pretty collection. It is a pretty edition. It's. Right. A movie that I'd say, like, again, is worth watching. Just know what you're getting in for.
Yeah.
You're watching some performances. You're watching some car chases. You're watching the fantastic direction and cinematography, frankly. You know, that entire, like, really tense scene that's like, let's go into this tunnel. Like, just, again, the directing, the cinematography, gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't try to follow the fucking plot. Don't bother.
Yeah, because it's kind of embarrassing when you do.
Just watch it for the individual scenes all kind of strung together in a row, and we'll call that a day, you know?
Right. Exactly. Now, here's the thing. There is actually an alternate ending to this film. Because as we see at the very end, we get De Niro and Reno in a cafe together, and they have a conversation, and then they leave. And the last shot is of De Niro walking up a set of steps. But in the original ending, it focused on Deirdre outside the cafe. And she contemplates whether or not to enter the cafe, decides against it. And then as she walks to her car, she is taken by the IRA, and who will, we think, presumably are going to, like, probably kill her. So I guess Frankenheimer said that the preview audience didn't like that ending, and because they didn't want to see Deirdre die, so they filmed another ending where Deirdre walks away after Sam walks out of the cafe. But the preview audience didn't like that ending either because, quote, they thought it was the setup to a sequel and described it as too Hollywood. Weird. So they cut that as well. But apparently Frankenheimer likes the original ending that he shot with Deirdre getting taken by the IRA the best. I think that would be, I could see that. I kind of like that one.
I mean, I like the ending we get. It's fine. I don't know that it needs to change.
Yeah. I also kind of, when we talk about the good performances, but I'm frankly not very sold on De Niro's performance, except on a few scenes. Like, he plays this so reserved, so internal, that I'm just left wanting more without, like, a lot of satisfaction. So there you go.
Yeah, I get that. I don't know. I like his performance just in reflection of everything else, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. Like, I like his character who's, like, always knows what he's doing and, and doing his best, even if it seems that he doesn't. Maybe it's something he doesn't even believe in, but he's it's his job, and he's doing it. I don't know if there's much more for me to say about.
No, I don't think so. Now, I am going to do something, however, here, because we usually end up going, here's the next movie, but you give me an idea, and I'm going to ask you right now, which you in no way are required to say yes. Do we want to hold what we were going to do next week, or do you want to change it for a movie that probably no one can actually watch with us?
Ooh.
But it's Wasabi. Because it's not streaming anywhere. It's not for sale anymore.
Huh.
So good luck finding it. It was almost never known. I don't even think it was ever released in the US outside of, like, on DVD for a little bit. And I don't even know if I want to pitch this to you, except to say that it's Besson writing a movie for Jean Reno that is essentially the comedy satire version of The Professional.
Wow.
Except it's stranger than that and funnier.
Well, I'm genuinely curious.
So we could switch to that, or we could wait a while and switch to it later and keep what we're doing.
I don't know. This sounds too tempting to turn down, frankly.
All right. So, yeah. So next week, people, we're going to do a movie called Wasabi again. I don't know where you can find it. I found a DVD of it years ago. And I'm just going to also just reset our thing. I found a DVD of it years ago. Like I said, like, I don't know if it exists anywhere else ever. And that DVD doesn't seem to be available. I don't think it's streaming anywhere, so I apologize that we're actually going to do something that we can't share with you in a large sense.
That's okay.
But it happens, and trust me, this hearing Aiden's reaction to this movie, folks, is going to be worth it. That's all I can tell you.
I'm sincerely looking forward to it.
Yeah, so we'll be back next week with that, and until then, we'll cue some music?
Yes, music!
Woo!
Le Fame!